This is The Think Tank, talking about the major economic, political, and social issues of the week on The Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR. Here's Dr. Mike O'Neill and Mike Russell.
And we are back. Thanks for spending some time of the weekend with us. Cruising through a very beautiful weekend here in the Valley of the Surface of the Sun, along with Dr. Mike O'Neill. Always find more about Dr. Mike O'Neill at MikeO'Neill.org. Blogs, you can write in, email him, get all the pertinent information of the day. We have two very special guests with us today. Today we're covering the rules of the game, the changes in election law, how it affects us here right in the state of Arizona. We have Julie Earfley from Protect Your Right to Vote AZ and Representative Steve Montenegro, repping District 13. A lot of people are thinking 2014, that's when the elections are. Why are we talking about it now? I guess there's been some rules changes.
Exactly. I think this is the hardest part of this test. Keep your eyes from glazing over. But what I want to tell you is you think that everything is decided in November. Often it's decided way in advance. These seemingly arcane rules of the game have a huge impact on the people that we elect, far more than anybody who's not. Everybody inside the process understands this. Most general citizens don't. And that, if we can do nothing else today but to get you to understand that these kinds of rules and other rules like it have a huge impact on ultimately who we elect, I think we'll have accomplished something.
And I think that's important for people like me, people that look at a lot of this from the outside and think, why? It's just an election. We show up and we vote and we see some TV commercials. We start to get bored with the TV commercials, yet we still show up and vote.
Yeah, and we're not going to talk about any specific candidates or any specific races, but as I said, if you get anything from today's discussion, I think you're going to walk away with an understanding that there's a lot of ways that you can monkey with the system, and those can have an impact on the output. That said, we have two guests who take opposing views on this. The omnibus bill in question, and I say omnibus because it had four major components, and we're going to talk about each one of those separately, was House Bill 2305. Okay, big, long number, doesn't mean anything yet. But a number of provisions, and I want to spend a few minutes talking about each one of these. The first one of these is a provision in this. This is not just a bill now. This is a law that's been passed by both houses and signed by the governor. And up until this time, it was perfectly legal for voters who had an at-home ballot, a mail-in ballot, to fill out the ballot, to seal it, to sign it, and to allow somebody else to take it into the to the polling place. And that has been outlawed now. Steve Montenegro, you are a Republican who voted for this and rumored to be also a candidate for Secretary of State. And if you're successful in that endeavor, if your exploratory committee goes the way I suspect these committees usually go, you would be in the position of enforcing this law. Tell us why this is a good idea.
Well, first of all, thank you, Dr. Mike O'Neill and Mike, for having me on today. It is a pleasure to be here as well with Julie. Well, we have to remember first and foremost that this bill was an attempt at addressing fraud within the election system. We as citizens, as voters, we expect the integrity to be upheld of the election process. We as legislators are trying to do everything possible to prevent voter fraud. I don't think anybody likes it when their identity is stolen. So why would we agree that it's okay not to fight against your vote being taken or played with or even used in that matter? So I think that we have to be clear here as well, because it does not prevent somebody from taking that ballot. If it's your family member, if it's somebody you trust, in fact, they are still able to do that. What we're looking at is political groups with political agendas that do something that we call ballot harvesting. And it's not just about these groups showing up and wanting to collect the ballot. It's about them. The legislature received evidence, and we received testimony that there were volunteers impersonating elections officers showing up at doors saying, "I'm here as an election officer from the county to collect your ballot," when it wasn't the case. So this is, again, harvesting. It is political committees.
That sounds like if that occurred, that was illegal. Was somebody prosecuted? Was anybody investigated?
Well, this is the process that we're trying to fight against. So I don't know the details of where it's at now, but I can tell you that as legislators, we see this very seriously because we are elected to protect the rights of the citizens and make sure that things like this are not happening.
Julie, are you in favor of voter fraud?
Of course not. And I'm glad that you brought that up because definitely the group that I represent, which is almost 20 different groups coming together on this coalition, we are definitely not in favor of voter fraud. And I'm so glad that you brought that up, Steve, because this is very concerning to me. What's concerning is that there was a very effective get out the vote effort by essentially voter advocacy groups that happened to favor Latinos, that happened to favor groups that tend not to vote Republican. Now, they were able to collect ballots from people who are disabled, who are homebound, who are low propensity voters. They were able to turn those votes in. These are young volunteers, some of whom I met, who were not criminals. They weren't doing anything illegal. They weren't doing anything unethical. In fact, they were doing what we ask our young individuals to do, which is to get involved in our democracy. That's what they did. Now, what's very unfortunate for me to hear from Steve and from his colleague, Michelle Reagan, are these rumors that somehow they were doing something that was illegal. And right now, that's all we have. As you pointed out, Mike, there's no investigation going on. There's no evidence that this is anything other than rumors and innuendo. And so because we have nothing more than rumors and innuendo, we want to then put these people in a bad light. And that's very distressing for me, and distressing that our elected officials would want to put these individuals in a bad light, would want to now criminalize their acts. I find that very hard to believe. I also find it hard to believe that if there was any evidence at all, that we had voter fraud going on with these groups, that Ken Bennett, our current Secretary of State, who was willing to investigate the president's birth certificate, would not be investigating this right now.
Has anything, Steve, been referred to the county attorney, for example, for prosecution or even investigation?
Well, it should. If this is, I mean, this is the evidence that was presented to the legislature in the testimony. What's unfortunate for me to hear from Julie is that once again, we bring the race component into this. And it's insulting to say that Latinos are the ones that are involved. And again, it's Latinos that are being persecuted or Latinos the ones that are being targeted. When the fact of the matter is that we're talking about the elections process. And I submit that we have to be careful with blaming Latinos for election fraud all the time. What we're trying to do.
I am definitely not blaming Latinos for election fraud, nor am I bringing race into the process.
We'll let Julie respond to that. We have to go to break. This is 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to The Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
All right, a lot going on with election law. The rules of the game seem to be changing. Julie Earfley from Protect Your Right to Vote Arizona is here. Also, Representative Steve Montenegro. Now, before the break, we had to cut you off, Julie. We apologize for that. We got to pay some bills around here. But we were talking about the issue of race and specifically targeting the Latino community when it comes to voter fraud.
I actually was a little confused with where Steve was going in that last break. It almost sounded like I was trying to bring race into the issue. I'm not trying to bring race into the issue. I think voter fraud is very serious. And while we're talking about voter fraud, perhaps we should ask what cases of voter fraud have been prosecuted in Arizona, and that many of those cases have been prosecuted against Republicans. So I'm confused by why this is somehow going to protect us against voter fraud when there has been no evidence of voter fraud committed. We are creating a portion of this law based solely on rumors and innuendo, not a single shred of evidence. There is no investigation going on. How can we claim voter fraud? If anything, I feel like you're bringing these issues up, like I said, putting people who worked really hard in this last election in a really bad light. And I find that distressing.
Well, Steve, to go to you on that point, I think one of the common themes throughout each of these provisions that we're going to talk about is that they make it a little bit harder to vote.
Well, that's
now,
just
if
it.
If that is going to protect against genuine voter fraud, that may be justified.
But it there's merit for me making that comment because you did bring it up. You said that this is particularly because it was a Latino group. So you did bring it up. And in your blog back in February, you specifically named that it was, that this is partly the reasons why, because Latino groups have been successful. And so you have been.
Well, that's true. They have been.
But you bring up the issue of race, Latinos being on one side, which we have to be careful because they're not. Latinos have different thoughts. Latinos want to fight against voter fraud. They want to make sure.
I agree.
We come from different countries in South and Central America where there is a lot of elections and voter fraud. And so we want the utmost respect. That's the foundation of this country. We trust.
If I could clarify the point, is that, and this is my sort of political science 101 background, the fact is that upper middle class white voters who are wealthier vote in higher proportions and basically have been habituated over years to vote. There's a number of groups that don't have traditionally not voted in as great numbers. Younger people, non-white people, people of lower education and lower income, absent a get-out-the-vote effort, as a matter of absolute fact, do not vote in as great numbers.
Well, and you know, look, this also has to do with numbers. There's a reason why they're called minorities. They're less of the population. So if we're going to start, you know, putting them up against each other, then we have to be careful with that as well. There's a reason why less people vote, proportionately.
And now we saw with the last presidential election, didn't we hear, this is from the middle-class white guy in the room, we hear that minorities showed up in record numbers, that the youth vote showed up in record. This is what we were hearing. We were told by the media, we were told by the cable news outlets, we were told by President Barack Obama that overwhelming numbers of minorities showed up to the polls, as did an overwhelming number of younger voters. Haven't we moved on? Why do we need to change laws if this is going the right way?
I think, to be precise about it, younger voters voted in unprecedented numbers. I'm not sure it reached the level of older voters. Blacks, for the first time in American history, exceeded by an insignificant amount, but it was historically significant, exceeded in 2012, but not 2008, the number proportion of whites who were voting. Hispanics did not.
Also, Mike, just to interject real quick, part of the reason why there was such a successful, you know, why we had these groups voting in higher numbers is because of successful vote, get out the vote techniques that were used that we are now trying to criminalize.
But we have to be careful. Let's go back to the intent and let's go back to what the bill actually does. This isn't targeting one person. This is saying the responsibility and the right to vote is sacred. And so let's not try to make it on one segment of the people when we're talking about voter fraud in general, trying to prevent that in general across, you know, ethnicities.
The problem is that it just doesn't. This isn't about voter fraud. That's the problem. This is not about voter fraud. This is about trying to fix a problem that doesn't exist. This is about creating a law based off of rumors and innuendo.
When we have political
groups. And who does this benefit?
Groups, when we have political groups that spend time collecting ballots. The right to vote is something sacred. Many people have given their life so that you and I have the right to vote, but we also should see it as a responsibility to show up to the ballot box and deliver our vote. And if you have political parties out there that are, you know, getting involved in the process, we have to be careful.
Let me ask you a question, Steve. All that's a given. If somebody is an invalid, a shut-in, and a political group wants to come by and assist by taking the vote, assuming that there is no fraud, they don't monkey with what the vote was, what's the harm in that? If somebody messes with the vote, changes it or anything like that, you make that a criminal offense and you prosecute.
Exactly.
Well, and that's, again, there are programs that help people that can't physically make it to the ballot to get out there. So we're not discussing that. We're talking about specific political action groups that have an intent and where we have seen voter fraud. Now, I mean, if the argument is that we haven't seen it, so are we going to leave doors open so that it happens? We're inviting it to happen by not closing these doors.
But Steve, you just misspoke there because you said it has happened, and yet you failed to give one concrete example of where it happened.
Let me go back to what I mentioned
earlier.
We have
only heard from yourself and your colleague, Michelle Reagan, about this.
No, if you go back to the committee hearings at the legislature that are on and in the archives, you will see that people have testified that they show up to their houses, and these aren't just people. although it would be enough, but you're talking about election officials, people showing up at their door saying they're here from the county, their election officers, to collect their ballot. This is something that's happening. They're impersonating an elections officer. They're out there harvesting ballots when it is person's...
I can tell you, my coalition would definitely be opposed to that. And the coalition that I represent
includes Latino
advocacy voter groups.
So is the merit...
This doesn't prevent it.
And the merit's
this
not worthy?
This doesn't prevent it. If there's voter fraud going on, we already have laws on the book to deal with voter fraud. If this was happening, why was it not handed over for an investigation?
That's what we're trying to do is prevent it from happening. You say it doesn't. We say that we want to make sure that it is a crime for political action groups to collect these ballots.
I think we found common ground, but wait a second here. You say you don't want harvesting to happen. You say harvesting isn't happening. And so I think we can, and I'm going to talk like a grown-up here. In politics, we tend to not talk like grown-ups sometimes. I want to talk like a grown-up. We have something to build on here. Would both parties agree that there's something we don't like harvesting, vote harvesting, right? Or ballot harvesting, is that what we called it?
Correct.
Not really a great idea. Is that what you were saying, Julie, or no?
I don't see how this was ballot harvesting. When you're talking about volunteers going out and doing get out the vote efforts and taking ballots that are already signed and sealed and delivering them to the polls, I don't see that as ballot harvesting.
It seems to me that Steve did reference one thing. Talk about people impersonating an elections official.
That would definitely
be
opposed to.
And that would seem to me is a criminal offense.
Right.
Exactly.
You don't like that.
Definitely not. But there are laws on the book already to deal with that.
Oh, okay.
But it's happening.
So then let's deal with it.
And we are. The legislature has taken a measure to make sure that we criminalize people impersonating, people harvesting ballots.
Check that out right here on the think tank. We get step one. We're taking steps to find commonality when it comes to voter rights laws. We'll be back. You're listening to the News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to the think tank on the Voice of Arizona. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
Check us out, finding commonality. I love it. You know, when the medicinal marijuana issue hit the ballot here in the state of Arizona, I thought, well, they just went down to ASU and went to maybe the community colleges and got all the signatures that they might have needed. Didn't seem like too difficult of a task to get the signatures really that you need for anyone, for any type of initiative. Apparently, that's changing as well.
Well, if you're a member of a party other than the Democrats or Republicans, one of the provisions of this law is to increase the number of signatures required by quite a bit. Julie, your problem with that?
My problem is that we're talking about limiting voters' choices. I mean, when you're talking about increasing the signature requirement for libertarians by 4,000%, that's not a small number. That's not a small number at all. And I think it's pretty obvious who benefits from that. It's Republicans. Republicans in this state have been saying for a long time, and they received a lot of pressure from national Republicans to pass this bill and to make sure that this part of this bill was in it. And that is to ensure that libertarians cannot get on the ballot because
Steve,
they think they're spoilers.
We got to move a little quickly because there's more. Steve, if this holds up, it seems to me that the inevitable result is we don't see a libertarian line
once
in the
again
ballot.
Yeah, but this is, look, she said this benefits Republicans. Look, in LD2 there is a tremendous amount.
What's LD2?
Okay, legislative district 2.
Thank
an
you.
Example or
appreciate
legislative
it.
District 7, but look, where Democrats have more of a population of registration, they're also affected by this, and it's going to decrease them. It's going to benefit. If you look at Legislative District 2, District 3, 4, 7, 8, 9, 10, 19, 24, 26, 27, 29, 30, all these districts, it's going to benefit Democrats.
I think you're talking about
the signature requirements.
For Democrats and Republicans,
yeah, so
which were changed little bit.
Let me finish. Let's not make it this is only benefiting or this is going to benefit Republicans, because that alone right there is not correct. Second of all, limiting people's choices, no. I mean, it seems to me that if we're going to be careful with the voters and make sure that we're looking out for their ballot and how they are able to, you know, bring their ballot forward, shouldn't it be the same for candidates? Now, what we're doing with this bill is equalizing the amount of signatures that every candidate has to get. It's not fair to allow one candidate to get substantially less because of their political ideologies. That is discrimination based on your political ideology. That's not right.
But
that's not what this country is
on. The practical
on.
Effect of that is we're not going to see libertarians. We're not going to see green. We're not going to see anything other than Democrats
that's incorrect.
And Republicans.
That's incorrect. That's incorrect. Because they can still go out and get the same amount of signatures that Republicans and Democrats get in that district. Again, this is discriminating somebody. If in LD in Legislative District 7, the Democrats have to get 630 signatures. Republicans have to get 232. And Libertarians have to get 8. Green Party, that's not fair.
There are smaller parties.
Well, then that's different, isn't it? If they want people to agree to their political views, then they need to go out there and share their party stance and platforms and get people involved. But it's not fair to penalize the Democrats in Legislative District 7 to get more signatures because they believe a different political ideology.
But isn't this the death knell to minor parties if they're not going to be on the ballot?
This is about fairness for getting on the ballot.
Julie?
This isn't about fairness to voters. Voters want choices. We are a very independent state. We want our choices. And the Libertarians and the Greens would not be joining with Democrats, would not be joining with almost 20 other groups to oppose this bill if they thought that this was a boon to their
Does
party.
This prevent...
If they thought that this was anything good. And Steve cannot sit here and seriously tell me that he thinks that third party candidates are going to be getting on the ballot.
I'm going to move off.
You know how hard it is to get signatures from somebody other than those people who are in your
and
party.
And precisely because I've been collecting signatures, I think every candidate who wants their name on the ballot should be treated fairly and should have to get the same amount of signatures as somebody
by
else.
Limiting
Look,
choices.
I have always fought against discrimination based on race, based on skin color, based on ethnicity. So if we're not discriminating in areas like that, we shouldn't be discriminating also on political ideology, because you believe something different than I do, I'm going to make you go collect 3 times amount of signatures as me. If Julie runs in District 7, she shouldn't have to collect 3 times more signatures than I do because I'm a Republican.
Well,
it's
that's
wrong.
Actually what we've already been doing to independents.
And that's why we're changing what
another,
we're doing. We're
but that's another story.
Okay.
And we're go ahead, Mike.
I want to run as a libertarian. There's a couple more provisions that I want to shortchange. One of them is to change the permanent early voting list by striking people from that list if they don't vote in 2 election cycles. And you would get a postcard. And if you fail to return that postcard, you're stricken from the list. Steve, why is that a good idea?
Once again, what we're trying to do is clean up the voter list of votes from preventing fraud. You have people that have either passed away or have moved to other states, and those ballots are still being sent out.
Is anybody voting them, though?
They're being sent out, and we're talking about voter fraud. People can get their hands on these ballots out there because they're being sent out. People have died for the right to vote. We need to make sure that we're fighting for the integrity of the process. If somebody has not voted in 2 cycles, that doesn't mean they can't show up and vote. But that doesn't mean we're taking them off of the voter registration list. That just means we're not going to be sending out a ballot.
We're making it harder if you don't vote in 2 cycles.
Come on, Dr. O'Neill.
I think what Steve Montenegro's point is that it's sent out, no proof that it's being used or not used. But I think the argument is, from just a layman's standpoint, is if voting is such a sacred thing to the United States, why not just protect it and eliminate the possibility of it happening instead of years down the road saying, oh my gosh, we look back and there were X amount during this election used and X amount this, and then the damage is already done. Let's ask Julie that question.
Well, first of all, let me say that I agree that voting is very sacred. And when you're talking about the kind of overhaul that this bill is, it should go before the voters. So let's talk about that real quick. Let's talk about the fact that this is the biggest change to election laws that I've ever seen since I've been a resident of this state. And we now have not one, but 2 Republican groups who are trying to keep it from even getting on the ballot, who are trying to keep it from voters having the opportunity to even have a say in this. And let me tell you about the PEVL, because this is interesting. This is a new argument from Steve. The argument
PEVL,
before...
Permanent early voting
yes,
list.
Yes.
Thank you.
The argument before was that this was going to clean up what happened on election night. As we saw on election night and election day, we had these very long lines at the polls. We had a lot of provisional ballots. This was a problem. Now, if you go back and you analyze the data, however, you'll find that a lot of people who were voting in provisional ballots were voting in the wrong polling places, meaning that their provisional ballots weren't counted, Why? Because they weren't informed that they had to go to a different polling place. Now, this could be fixed. This could be fixed by the legislature. Here's a real problem that could actually be fixed by the legislature. It could be fixed by allocating more resources to these poll workers to make sure that they're adequately educated. It could be fixed by opening up polling locations to allow voters to vote at more than one poll location. It could be fixed by a good education.
Okay, real quick, there's one more provision, and I want you each to respond quickly to this. The change, the other provision was to require strict compliance instead of substantial compliance on citizen initiatives and recall campaigns. I want to hear from both of you, but quickly, because we got less than 2 minutes here.
Okay, well, I'm sorry, but this is the most important and most misunderstood part of this bill. Strict compliance is essentially a backdoor route of getting rid of our constitutionally protected right within this state of Arizona to have citizen initiatives and recalls. And it is the most shameful part of this, and it is why everybody, including Republicans, should be upset with this bill for this measure and this measure alone. We're talking about essentially making this a boon for election attorneys, because Steve knows as well as I do that the only thing that strict compliance is going to do is it's going to tie up every single initiative and every single recall in court. The smallest of details, the wrong margins on petition signatures, every one of those things is now reason to take it to court and have petitions thrown out.
Got to give it to Steve real quick, Steve.
This is where you're going to like it, because although we disagree on the reasoning why to agree here, I agree that this part was very difficult in the bill as well, because of different purposes, and I don't think it's a secret that I've spoken on this subject as well. But the reasoning may be different behind why we're doing it as well. I don't like to leave more power into the hands of judges. If we have a political activist judge that likes to legislate from the bench, yeah, maybe that might be a reason why Julie likes it. But the reason I don't like is I don't like putting power, more power, into the hands of the judges when it comes to these issues.
So it's taking power then out of the hands of voters, because that's what this does. It takes power away from citizen initiatives, which is, by the way, a constitutionally protected right.
We're gonna wrap it up here in just a second. Thanks for being with us, folks. This is The Think Tank on News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to The Think Tank on The Voice of Arizona. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
We don't dance around stuff here. We get right to it. A little lively debate here. I loved it. Julie Earfley, thank you so much. Protect Your Right to Vote Arizona. And representing District 13, Representative Steve Montenegro, thank you both very much for joining us. Doc, I want to start with the three things I think to be an American. You need to pay your taxes, you need to participate in jury duty, and you need to vote. I can't think of anything else you need to do to be a part of all the liberties and the greatness of this country. You only have three things. So if one of those things, no math major, around 33% of that is voting, why not do everything you can to keep it locked down and sacred for those that are qualified to vote?
I don't think there's anybody on either side of this that has any quarrel with that.
Mm-hmm.
I think,
it seems like everybody's quarreling.
Well,
though.
I don't. Not on that point.
Okay.
I think the question is whether or not this was a fix to a problem, or whether this was a way of increasing the partisan advantage of one side. And I think, I think the evidence in this case points more to the latter.
So we heard from both sides. And I will tell you from, and we talked about the libertarian only having to get eight signatures. Mm-hmm. I'm so in. Being a libertarian, mm-hmm. I might run. I might run. But I heard from both sides, from parties that I'm not involved in, and I really didn't see one or the other gaining any type of an advantage. Tell me where we're gaining advantage.
Let me walk you through every one of these. And I think what is unassailably true, apart from the arguments for in advance, but to walk through one of these. For example, in the order we took them in, the first is prohibiting people from collecting ballots that have been already filled out and sealed.
Perfect.
The fact is that in the last election, in order to increase Hispanic turnout, there was an organized effort in Latino communities to, particularly amongst first-time voters, to go around and collect ballots. Mm-hmm. And that I think both sides are very much aware of the fact that the majority of those were Democratic, because Hispanics voted Democratic in about 70% of the time. We don't know who, person by person, but surveys have made that very clear.
Okay.
Number two, increasing the signatures required.
Wait. Can we stop there and ask what was the issue there?
Well, I mean, what I want to make the case and go through, if we could go through
okay.
each of these,
go ahead.
Is that so this provision in the law would aid Republicans by making that harder. Because most of the people who did that and manually collected ballots in the last election were Democrats.
But if Visa decided to go door to door and collect ballots, applications for credit cards for the people that couldn't send credit card applications in, I think a lot of people would have a hard time with that because there's the possibility that someone, not all of them,
That's getting into the issue whether it's a good or bad idea.
Okay.
The point I want to make is that each one of these had an advantage.
Okay.
Increasing the number of signatures required for third-party candidates, that is in it is the fact that we have three congressional seats that are competitive, and they were all won by Democrats, and in two of those three cases, the number of votes cast for the Libertarian plus the number voted for the Republican would have had the Libertarians not been on the ballot and had those Libertarians voted for the Republican would have won two or three of those cases. So there's a belief that having Libertarians on the ballot takes away votes from Republicans.
Okay.
Bob Robb and others have argued that that's not the case, but there's a widespread belief.
I just have a logistical question on that. So is it increasing everyone to the same level, or is it bringing a few of them, Republicans or Democrats?
It increases the small parties by a massive amount.
Okay.
It makes everybody equal.
But does it
regardless
drop anyone?
In the change for Democrats and Republicans is pretty insignificant. You know, if you're in a heavily, it requires the same number of signatures for everybody. Instead of right now, it requires the same percentage of the votes cast in that district.
Okay, because but the example that was used was 600 and something
right.
for Democrats, 200 for Republicans, and 8 for Libertarians.
Because the Libertarians got 2% of the vote.
Well,
but
what I'm saying
smaller.
Is, wouldn't it bring down, like, say, the Democrats would only have to get 200 instead of 600.
Well,
wouldn't it help the Democrats?
That was selective in terms of district.
Okay.
What it would do is require in any given district, all parties have to get the same. But that's kind of like saying the rich and the poor can both sleep under the bridges of London. If you're a Libertarian, you're never going to get that number. The Democrats and the Republicans will.
Okay, what's the next one?
Early voting list. If you haven't voted in two consecutive elections, you're knocked off the early voting list. The fact of the matter is that people who are highly educated, higher income, older people, and whites vote more consistently, and those groups tend to be Republicans. So it just so happens that the people who are more likely to get knocked off of this permanent early voting list will be lower income, less educated, and more minority groups. And guess what? Those just happen to be Democrats.
From a guy like me, I think you don't vote, you're out. Three things you got to do to be an American.
The point is, I think the folks who constructed this know that this is an even-handed law that doesn't have an even-handed effect. So, and that is consistent with all four of these points. The fourth point about requiring strict compliance on initiative provisions, that's one that says essentially the courts have said, you know, if you're substantially in compliance, you follow all the rules in the way everybody knows, you have to say what it is you're doing and has to be reasonably precise. But if you didn't dot every I and cross every T, as long as the intent of the voters was clear, that's good enough. Now they're saying strict compliance, that essentially you can get knocked off for very minor technical things, even though you got the number of signatures. Why is that partisan? Because we have a heavily the Republicans own the legislature and the governorship, and most of the initiatives that have been passed, or a lot of them that have been passed in this state, have been over the dead body of the political establishment, and they don't like it, and therefore they don't like the initiative process, and anything that makes that harder is makes the political establishment, which happens currently to be Republican, happy.
Why are the if signatures are involved to put an initiative on a ballot,
right?
Why are judges involved?
Well, there's always questions about what's a good signature. So, for example,
okay.
if on the signature, strict compliance might require, for example, if you used your middle initial when you signed up to register to vote,
strict compliance
might say that if you didn't use your middle initial when you signed it doesn't count. or there's some minor technical flaw, not a substantive flaw, but a minor technical flaw in the way the initiative was worded. A strict compliance means it's much easier to throw it out.
You know, I think it'd be a good idea is to give our listeners a website. If is there a website where we can read all of this? Is it on the state legislation website? Is it on your site, Steve? Is it on Julie? Is it on yours?
No, we don't have a website up for our coalition right now. We're focusing on making sure that the voters have a say on it, just trying to get it on the ballot.
Right, right. We'd like to, but I think
until you get signatures, there's nothing to vote on.
Well, and
exactly.
But voters can go to the legislature's website,
which is
the
what?
Bill.
Can you help us out with that?
Yeah, sure. Just Arizona House of Representatives.
Arizona House
just
of Representatives.
Just Google that.
And, then it will be House Bill 2305.
2305. And I think that's important because people that are listening right now wanting to go either way, they want to read this. I think they want to read it for themselves. Is it in a lot of legalese or can I understand it? Let's be real. You know me. I don't know.
I'll tell you, they have to put it down. They have to break it down so that all the members in the legislature understand it.
Whew. Okay.
So I could tell you that there's a lot of us that ask for clarification.
Clarification, right. Yeah. Can you just talk like an American? Jeez. Yeah. But anyway, Dr. O'Neill, I have to ask you, in summation, wrap this up for us. Where is this going to go? Does it have a chance to pass?
That's depending on whether Julie's group has the wherewithal to get the signatures. So that's shoe leather
so
and
she
money.
She gets the signatures. What happens?
She gets the signatures. They get filed with the Secretary of State. If the Secretary of State decides that enough of those signatures are valid, then the law is held in abeyance and we get to vote on it in 2014.
Okay, so basically that is what we're up against right now, that we get whether or not we get to vote on it as the citizenry.
Depends on whether it's Julie's group or some other group. I presume there isn't. It's whether her group can get the requisite numbers. How many do you need?
Just over 86,000.
Okay. Oh, I thought you were going to say eight the Libertarian.
And as a practical matter, that means you need probably 120,000 because they always throw out signatures.
Julie Earfley with Protect Your Right to Vote Arizona and Representative Steve Montenegro, thank you so much for joining us today. Dr. Mike O'Neill from O'NeillResearch.com.
Thank you.
I'm Mike Russell. Thanks so much for being with us. This is The Think Tank on News Talk 92.3 KTAR.